The debate, as I understand it, boiled down to this, whether the health insurance exchange should be run by the state of Tennessee or by the federal government. What is the difference there?
Okay. Well, actually, there's three options, and we'll talk about the first two because they're the most important, but we also need to bring up the third. Really, this has a long history, so I'd like to explain that a little bit because I think it'll help people understand. State-based exchanges actually are an idea that originated in Massachusetts. They're the centerpiece of the Massachusetts state health reform. And originally, they were very embraced by conservatives. Why is this? Well, the basic principle of how they work is using competitive market forces. So that had an appeal, particularly to folks of the conservative persuasion. And as I said, they have been successfully implemented in the state of Massachusetts, and they are the model for what's in the federal law. When we saw the debate unfolding in Congress that eventually led to the passage of the Affordable Care Act, we saw a division between the House of Representatives and the Senate. The House of Representatives, in many ways, took a somewhat more liberal approach. And in their bill that they passed, they actually looked at a federal exchange. The idea being there were some economies of scale running an exchange on a federal level rather than state by state. In the Senate, where there was a much more conservative flavor to the debate, they were the ones that brought forth the idea of state-based exchanges. And the idea was to take control more to the states, to allow flexibility at the states. So we saw a little bit of a shift in who was for and who was against state-based versus federal exchanges. The Affordable Care Act, as we know it now, basically is the version that passed in the Senate. So it's the more conservative bill between the House and the Senate, and it's the one that allows for state-based exchanges. However, it gives two other options, and that's if the state does not want to run a state-based exchange, the federal government will do it. Or there's a third option, which is a hybrid, where there's cooperative running of the state-based exchange with the federal government. And right now we have 18 states that have declared that they will have the feds run their exchange. We have 17 that said they will do a state-based exchange, and 7 have selected the hybrid model, and some have not declared yet. That has to be done by Friday of this week.
Would consumers see a difference based on whether their state is running the exchange or whether the federal government is running the exchange or whether it's a joint partnership? Would consumers see a difference there?
The differences that consumers see may be somewhat subtle, but these are the differences that are being discussed. Because remember, we're plowing new ground. We have not done this before. But those that prefer the state-based exchange say, well, you'll have retained state control, so you'll have a state flavor to your exchange. And there are many that believe that the delivery of health care, all components of it, is a local phenomenon. So that's very important. Many project that the states could run the exchange for less, not only in the fee that's assessed for the operation of the exchange, but also keeping overall premiums down. So those are some of the positives, and that perhaps can be more sensitive to the special needs of the citizens in the state. What are some of the negatives to the feds running an exchange? Well, just the idea that it's the feds running it. Federal control is not appealing to many people. States lose their control of eligibility for Medicaid and SCHIP that would then be taken over by the federal government. There is no local involvement or insight when the feds are running it, so you'll lose that nuances that there's differences between Tennessee and California. And the federal government right now is paying for the implementation of state-based exchanges. Those states like Tennessee that opt to not begin with a state-based exchange, and because that decision can be changed, will not have that assistance, that financial assistance from the Department of Health and Human Services. So that's a pretty big deal. Other things that might be different is depending on who's running the exchange, the state or the federal government, they will be determining which plans are offered. They will be determining what benefits. So again, you move these decisions from a state-based to a federal-based locus of control. Exchanges also are the consumer interface. For those buying insurance through the exchange, there could be some differences seeing whether it's coming from a state-based exchange or a federal-based exchange. The federal government, in the case of Tennessee, will be determining eligibility. I guess you could say it could go on both sides, that they'll be more aggressive in enrolling people that are eligible, or maybe more aggressive than the state would be, or maybe they'll be less aggressive. We don't know. Again, this is uncharted territory. Another important function of the exchanges are to rate the various health plans that are offered. They'll be looking at price and at looking at quality. So will there be differences between how this would be done through a state-based exchange versus a federal exchange? I think it's safe to say there probably will be some differences. We don't know the degree of those differences or what they will be, but those are one of the things we're looking at. And the other thing that I know a lot of the consumer advocates, particularly in Tennessee, have been concerned about is the exchange will be doing a lot of outreach and assistance of those people that are eligible. And how aggressive will that outreach be if it's run by the state versus by the federal government? Because that consumer interface could be one of the more important moving parts about how people get enrolled, how they know if they're eligible, and how they navigate through the health insurance exchange.
But I think it's important to reiterate that although the decision has been made from Governor Haslam's office to allow federal officials to run, at least at first, Tennessee's health insurance exchange, we don't really know what form that's going to take yet. We don't have any idea how federal officials will operate the plan on a day-to-day level, right?
We don't have the level of detail that I think a lot of people want at this juncture, and I certainly understand that. Is, again, it's uncharted territory. It's a very massive task, and I think you've seen it characterized as we're writing the rules as we go. I mean, we have had an incremental implementation of the various provisions of the Affordable Care Act, but still it's happened in a very accelerated time period. We've taken all these pauses as we've looked at challenges to either the whole Affordable Care Act or provisions where precious time has been lost as we've looked to see what would be the outcome of the Supreme Court decision, what would be the outcome of the presidential election, et cetera. So I think it's true to say we don't really know exactly how the feds are going to run the exchanges. We have broad-based ideas, but not the nits and grits that the governors say, whether it's the feds or them, were very essential to their decision. Devil's in the details.
Governor Haslam, when he made his announcement a little earlier this week, said that politics had nothing to do with his decision, but it's no secret that legislative Republicans were promising a fight in the General Assembly when they reconvene in January. If Governor Haslam wanted to pass a state-run exchange, it would have to go through the General Assembly, and legislative Republicans didn't like that. What that makes me wonder is that legislative Republicans are generally in favor of keeping power on the state level, and that is to say in Nashville, not Washington. Why the 180 on this issue? Why is this example so different?
Well, we could actually probably spend the day exploring that question. And I've already mentioned to you that there's been this subtle shift through the history of the idea of health insurance exchanges from early support from conservatives, for example, the Heritage Foundation, with the Massachusetts plan, which is the model for the federal plan. So we had conservatives buying into state-based exchanges. We certainly saw that play out in the U.S. Senate, where the more conservative chamber went with the state-based exchange versus the somewhat more liberal in the debate around national health reform. The House went with the federal exchange. So you would think, well, this has more traction among conservatives, again, because it relies on a competitive marketplace and less on regulation. However, we're seeing a hyper-polarized political environment right now where perhaps Republicans are doing things that you say isn't what we would predict. There has been some indication that perhaps states are opting out of state-based exchanges in the hopes that this will hasten the demise of provisions or the entire Affordable Care Act. And indeed, one elected state insurance commissioner came out and actually said that publicly, that that was in play with their state's decision to not run a state-based exchange. So I think we're seeing not only common sense, business acumen, and political ideology playing out, we're seeing politics at its, I guess you could say, best or worst, depending on your perspective. So you can't predict what conservatives and liberals are going to do necessarily, but it does seem odd to me too, Brandon, that we would abdicate state control on something as important and such a major part of our state budget.
I should also point out there's a separate question facing state leaders as all this is going on, and that's the question whether or not to expand Medicaid in the state. So if you would, since it is a separate issue, let's walk through that as well. Tell me about the expansion of Medicaid and why that question has to be settled.
Today, the uninsured Tennesseans, and some people estimate that we have about 900,000 uninsured Tennesseans, those that will gain health insurance on January 1st, 2014, will gain it primarily one of two ways. One is through the health insurance exchange, which we've already talked about. And that's for folks that aren't eligible for Medicaid and do not have access to affordable employer-based coverage. So these are folks today that perhaps are buying individual policies, going uninsured, etc. The second avenue for uninsured Tennesseans and other Americans to gain coverage January 1st, 2014 under the Affordable Care Act is through Medicaid expansion. And what the Affordable Care Act does is basically raise the limit, the financial limit, the family income limit, to allow more people to be eligible for Medicaid. And importantly, it does another thing. To date, Medicaid has primarily been what we call a categorical benefit. You could receive the benefits of Medicaid if you were a member of one of the categories, a pregnant woman, a child, etc. Those categorical eligibility requirements are being removed. And what does that mean? It would be very difficult under the current Medicaid for an adult male to be eligible unless they met some pretty stringent criteria. Now what we'll see is that that's removed, and people up to a certain poverty level now, a much higher level than currently, will be able to attain Medicaid coverage. So it's important in that there are two avenues that Tennesseans will gain coverage. How those play out are both based on state decisions. We've already seen the governor's decision to not run a state-based health insurance exchange. Now the decision facing the governor is, will we participate in the Medicaid expansion? And that in and of itself is an important story, because originally the Medicaid expansion was required as part of the Affordable Care Act. But with the Supreme Court's review of the individual mandate, we were surprised that in some regards that that mandate was supported, but more surprised that they went in and looked at the requirement for states to participate in the Medicaid expansion and said no, it had to be optional. So we pushed that decision as to whether there would be a Medicaid expansion or not out to the states. There's not this looming deadline of Friday as we've seen with the health insurance exchanges. Instead, we've heard our governor declare probably after the close of the General Assembly in May or June of this year, the decision will be made. My major concern there is when we elected to do a federal-based health insurance exchange, it didn't leave people out in the cold. There was a backup to the state health insurance exchange in that we would have a federal-run health insurance exchange. If our state elects to not participate in the Medicaid expansion, there's no backup. Those folks between 100% of federal poverty level and 138% are basically left naked. There are no provisions in the Affordable Care Act for them to be able to access coverage or to receive the federal subsidies that will help make coverage that they could access affordable. And what really concerns me are these are the most vulnerable folks. So we don't have a backup plan, and that's why the decision about the Medicaid expansion is so important and one that we need to deliberate on as a state.
So the countdown really begins on New Year's Day 2013 as we count down this final year to the January 1st, 2014 rollout of the Affordable Care Act. What do you think we're going to see here in Tennessee and throughout the nation through the year of 2013 as the states and the federal government have to get up to speed in that time period?
I wish I had my crystal ball in front of me, but I think it's safe to predict that we will continue to have a hyper-polarized political environment, and I think we now have the overlay in Tennessee of a supermajority in both chambers of our General Assembly. I think we will see a lot of activity because this is complicated business. Reaching out to all Tennesseans to make sure that they have access to health care coverage, getting them enrolled, getting all the things necessary done to have them be able to use that coverage on January 1st, 2014, is very, very complicated. And then behind all that, an issue we've not even spoke about is having a card that says you have insurance is only the first step. What do you, what will that insurance get you? If we don't have primary care providers, if we don't have providers that are willing to serve Medicaid patients, et cetera, we still have people without access to health care. And health care really matters. And I would go on to say that there are some that say, why should we pay even the small portion that we would have to pay for the Medicaid expansion? My response to that is we're paying already. We're paying maybe in hidden ways. We're paying in lost productivity, lost quality of life, even loss of life. A young adult under age 64 has a 40% higher chance of death if they don't have health insurance than someone who does. You know, it matters to have health insurance. So first you have to have coverage, and then second you have to have access to good, high-quality care. So we have a lot to do to get ready. We are not one of the worst states as far as access to primary care providers, but we do have this odd problem of maldistribution of providers. Our rural areas are particularly underserved, and then in other areas, inner cities or with special populations, certain immigrant populations, very poor people, do not have access to the same kind of health care that others do that are more affluent, living in urban areas, higher educated, et cetera. So we have a lot of challenges that relate to the nits and grits of the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, but we also have much bigger issues that we need to deal with to fully realize the potential of all Americans having access to high-quality health care.
Dr. Carol Myers is an associate professor in the College of Nursing at the University of Tennessee, whose focus is on public health policy. Dr. Myers, thank you for being with us on All Things Considered.
My pleasure entirely. Thank you.